Richard Paul Evans is in the studio with me tonight. He is the author of a number of best-selling books, including the number one bestseller, The Christmas Box. He's also received a number of awards and honors, among them the Washington Times Humanitarian of the Century Award and the Volunteers of America National Empathy Award. Most recently, he's authored a series of 5 books, beginning with the novel titled The Walk, that focuses on the journey of his fictional narrator, Alan Christopherson. Tonight, we're going to talk about the 5th and final book in this series. It is titled Walking on Water. Welcome, Richard.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
I'm glad to see you. Before we get to this current book in the series, if you would just give us some background on Alan Christopherson. Where did he start out? What happened in his life that he decided to take the walk?
Alan Christopherson was a successful Seattle, Washington advertising executive. Things were going great. He married the girl next door. He was madly in love. They're making lots of money. He's winning awards. And then one day, everything changed. His wife was thrown from a horse where she breaks her back. While he's caring for her, his partner steals all of his clients. So he loses his business, and then she dies. And when he finally goes home, his home has been foreclosed on, and he's lost everything. So at that point, he first of all contemplates taking his life because he has no reason that he can think of to live. And then he decides instead to just go for a walk, to walk as far away as he can from where he is at that moment, which just happens to be Key West, Florida. So the walk is his travel as he looks for hope and a reason to live.
Well, in the current book, Walking on Water, he also is experiencing another major life change. So that puts his walk on hold for a little while. So what's happening that takes him back home?
Well, in the final book, it's his father. His father has had a heart attack. And so he goes home, and it's a chance for him to really, I think, put some things to rest to figure out, again, part of his process of why he's living and what life's about. He was not that close to his father, even though his father was a single parent. His mother died when he was 8 years old. And so he just learns more about his father. He discovers that his father, for one thing, has been writing his family history. And as he reads these things, he's a little bit stunned because there's things that his father never told him about his childhood. And I wanted to put that in the book because I think that's true of all of us. I remember sitting around after my mother passed away, and I'm with my siblings, and someone brings out this family history she had written, and I start reading it. And I thought, I am a week too late. After reading, I had so many questions and all these aha moments, like, well, that's why she did that. And that's why we were raised this way. And it, all of a sudden, it made sense. And it brings a lot of forgiveness, and it brings also sometimes a lot of regret that we weren't a little bit more forgiving in our lives.
Alan also has a couple of wonderful women in his life. So you want to tell us about Nicole and Faline? Is that how you pronounce her name?
Faline, yes. Faline? Faline actually is a friend of mine. It's based on a real person. She was named after the deer in Bambi. And so the doe, I should say. Her mother actually gave birth to her after seeing Bambi many years ago. So this is the love triangle in the book. And people ask what kind of book this is. And I think of it as an inspirational romance. I think that's the best way. To me, it was an exploration. But the romance keeps it going. And people have very strong feelings about who he should end up with, if he should end up with anyone at all. So there's 2 women. One is Faline, and she was his assistant at the advertising agency, and she's the only one who is loyal to him. She took care of things while he was gone. She tried to warn him about what was happening, but he wasn't taking phone calls. And then after his wife died, she tried to help him bring everything back together, or before his wife died. But she was there at the funeral. I mean, she's very endearing, and she's also a little bit of an irony because she's this beautiful model who people just have always assumed was very shallow from a very dark background, and she actually has a very good heart. The other woman is Nicole, who is someone that Alan meets along the way. He meets her in Spokane after he's been mugged just outside Spokane, and she takes care of him for a while, but she has her own dark secrets, and he saves her life. And so both of these women have a compelling reason to be in his life, and it's a little bit tricky for him.
Before we went on air tonight, we were talking about how hot off the presses this wonderful book started selling thousands of copies. And you were commenting that one of the great rewards has been the response from readers. So you want to talk a little about that? Is there one or two that particularly stand out for you? Or what do people say after they have read this book?
Right now, the comments are very similar. Thank you for the journey. I feel like I've walked across America with a million people. The book is actually a very big seller in Poland and Brazil and the Philippines. And so I get letters from those countries as well. The thing that surprised me most, there's two. One is I've received more than 40 phone calls from people on their deathbeds. Just for instance, just last week, I received an email from a man. He said, "My mother's dying. Your series is all she's talked about this last year. And she just wants to stay alive long enough to read the final book." And when I read that, he said, "They give her about a week to live." And at that point, by the time I read the email, it had been a couple of days. And so I emailed back and I said, "Would you like me to talk to her?" And then I got on a flight. When I got back, I opened my email. He said, "My mother just passed away. And so thank you so much for offering." That's actually very common, more than 40 phone calls. I don't know if they're all real, but I do know some are because I've actually called and spoken with hospice. And I remember one time a woman just needed to know if he made it to Key West. Now, this is something you know because the book begins in Key West, and I'm very careful about sharing secrets because in today's social media, you put it out there and it will spread virally.
Yes.
But I called her, and she couldn't speak, and I just said, "Yes, he does make it to Key West." And the woman came on, is her daughter, and said, "Mom has the biggest smile on her face." And about 3 hours later, she sent me an email and said her mother had passed away. So that's one of the things that's been kind of amazing about the book. It seems like it's more of a movement, that people are walking with him more than just a book. It's actually like this social movement. The other thing is, because Alan is trying to find a reason to live, it has appealed to people who are in the same place. I was speaking at a book signing two nights ago, and I said, I've had four people come to book signings and tell me the book had interrupted their suicide plans, that they had set a date, and then somehow the book came into their possession, and they decided to at least delay their suicide until I finished the series. And a woman came up to me and she goes, "Make it five. I'm alive today because of your series. I found no reason to live." And I was so fascinated with your thoughts and why we should go on. And she said, I'm alive today because of your book.
How did you come to decide on the walk as a reality, but also a metaphor in this person's life? How did that come to you? Do you remember?
Actually, the whole thing started as a professional quest. I wanted to write a series. I write kind of standalone literary novels, and I'd never written a series before. I didn't know how to write a series. I thought, well, how do you kind of keep things in the same place? I like what, you know, Debbie Maycumber or Jan Caron does. And it's like, well, they kind of create cities, and it just didn't work for me. And then it occurred to me, it's like, at the time, I was walking. I like to walk for inspiration. I was down at my ranch in southern Utah, and I was doing an 8-mile walk, and I'm out walking, and I thought, wait a second, the scenery has been changing for the last hour. Same guy, different experiences. It's like, let's have him walk. And then I thought, well, where's he walking? I said, well, a walk across America. Think of the things he could learn. And I thought, well, why is he walking? I thought, well, why don't I walk? I love to walk. It's like, that'd be an adventure. And I said, well, I can't walk because my wife would kill me. She'd hunt me down and kill me. And I have kids and I have a job and a publisher and agent. And then it just hit me, take it all away. And that's when I knew I was on something big. It's the question, if you lose everything that matters to you, if you lose these bonds that hold us into our lives, if suddenly they're cut, why do we keep living? And I realized that this is something I wanted to do, to really search out a reason for living and give people hope.
Well, it's wonderful to talk with you tonight, and certainly wonderful to learn that you've touched so many lives with your literature. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been talking with Richard Paul Evans about his latest book. It is titled Walking on Water. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray. I hope my feet.